Welcome, one and all, once again to Dual World in episode 155. I am joined this week by Jason.
Oh my gosh, we know what number we're on for once.
Dan, you.
Hi.
And Martin.
Greetings.
Okay, you all sound so energetic today. You had a week off.
Energetic.
You got to 10, and I don't know what people do in September. It's really just a dead month in between.
I played board games. That's what I did.
And I had a terrible week. So
that's never good.
Oh, and I've written some stuff.
But yeah, so September's really
exciting
kind of a,
things.
Yeah, September's really a dead month in general. It's usually when people put out movies that nobody cares about. We get one or two major games, and for some of us, it used to mean when you went back to school as a kid, so that was never a great thing. So, yeah, screw September. But it's almost over. But we still have to talk about stuff.
I like September.
You do? Why?
Well, because my birthday's in September.
Oh, well, that's just selfish.
October.
Everybody prefers October. The three best months of the year are coming up, October, November, December. Well, for us, you know, Halloween, Thanksgiving, and Christmas. The Golden Trinity.
And loads of video games.
Way too many, especially if you're Ubisoft, because they have a calendar. Ubisoft kind of goes from like the second week of November to the third week of November, and everything else is just like they throw out the pages.
Ubisoft that, always has so many video games that they have to release their own titles on the same day.
Yes,
impossible just, to time it differently.
They just want you to feel warm and fuzzy with Ubisoft Virgo when you come out the store with 10 games. because that's how it works, of course. And I mean, this isn't in the news, but I guess some of you will play it next week. I think The Crew goes into open beta this week.
So I can hate it again.
Oh, what platform is that on?
PS4 and Xbox One.
The Vita?
Yeah,
yeah, because the PC already had two betas, so...
The Vita is on PS4?
Yeah, the open beta starts this week.
When exactly?
I don't know, I just saw it in passing when I was looking for new...
Because I guess then I check it out?
Or maybe it's... I don't know. I feel so bad for The Crew because, one, it's going to kind of get ignored behind Forza and Drive Club in general. But then Ubisoft is also releasing it at the same time as two Assassin's Creed games, Far Cry 4, and I guess now Rocksmith. Because, again, they don't have a kind of that goes beyond November. So I
assume it's console closed beta starting late September. You have to register.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm assuming there's a ton of people registering. You'll probably find a code. They'll probably beg people to try.
I would probably do that, but they are asking me for my Uplay credentials.
Oh.
I have no
yes, I actually think that's why I didn't sign, because they had to sign up after E3, and I went to the website when it was actually working, and it was like, Uplay. Okay, never mind. I think I don't even know if I have a Uplay account. Like, I know I have an EA. What is EA's called?
You need to have one.
Origin.
Oh, yeah, they're Origin. Yeah, I have an Origin account because they've done that forever, and I think whatever Borderlands uses...
GameSpy? Well, it used to use GameSpy, doesn't it anymore.
No, but didn't, like, Borderlands 2 had, like, that weird... That
oh, the shift thing!
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, thankfully my Google Chrome remembered my Uplay credentials, because I don't. So I'm not registered.
I'm already clicking on. I forgot my password.
Yeah, it is weird what Google remembers, and now they really ask you. It gets kind of annoying. They ask you every time now if you want them to remember your password with that little key thing. I thought it was like a bug at first. Anyhow, I guess we should talk video games at some point. I was going to say nothing new came out this week, but that's not true. Hyrule Warriors came out this week, and none of you played that.
Because nobody owns a Wii U?
Hey, well, I own a Wii U, and I actually want to play it. just not right now because I have other stuff to play.
I am not that big of a Zelda fan to get it day one for $60. It seems like something I'd pick up for $30 down the road.
Oh, it's $60 in the US?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not full price over here, it's just €49.
Oh, fair enough. Yeah, which is really weird because Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze was $50, and I feel like that's more of a game. And I don't mean that insulting you, it just feels like there's a lot more that goes on in Donkey Kong. But, yeah, so next week, Shadows of Mordor, and then we kind of really kick
off. Yeah, lots of games next week.
Actually, yeah, Shadow of Mordor, then Smash 3DS.
And Forza Horizon 2.
I am super excited for Shadows of Mordor.
Yes,
I am now.
So glad that system... No, I was excited before. I was just unsure if the systems they have been showing actually worked. But apparently they do, and so
yeah.
That makes that a really cool game.
Yeah, we'll have more of that next week, I guess, when we actually do get someone to play it. But I guess we should talk about the games you folks have been playing that you actually have in your possession right now. And I don't know if any of these are recent. So who wants
to
kick us off? Okay, then we'll start with you.
Well, let's start with... both of them came out, I think, last week? Yeah. So let's first talk about Roundabout. That's the new game from Dan Teasdale. I don't know if any of you guys remember, I think it was a GBA game. The name was like Kuru Kururin or something like that. It was from Nintendo. Kuru Kuru Kururin was the name. And what you play, it was on the Game Boy Advance, and it never came out in the US. That's probably why you don't even know. And you played like always revolving stick, and you had to get that through levels. So it was always revolving around itself, and then you had to avoid obstacles and stuff. What Roundabout does is you play, a limo driver, and this limo driver drives in a way this limo is always revolving around itself. And you basically have to go through the city this way, avoiding obstacles, like in Kuru Kuru Kururin, and pick up passengers and do all kinds of crazy stuff, because later on they introduce stuff like, hey, now you can float on water, or how about now you can jump, so you can jump on rooftops and get from rooftop to rooftop. And all in between that, you get really silly FMV sequences with your passengers, with a really dumb but really funny story, and all the actors in this are kind of just indie developers and other people from the game industry who just do some so that makes it probably extra funny.
It's great to see, like, that's that guy from Uberin, or that's E from Xbox. It's really sweet.
Yep. Eric Hope is there from Harmonix, for example. He does, like, Redneck. It's super funny. I really like the GBA game, by the way, and this concept just really works. It's super fun. It's just how good are you at getting around obstacles this way in a very quick fashion, so you can and maybe even collect some stuff at the same time. Super fun game. Not too long. I think it's like 3 hours, 4 hours. Sorry, but there are some challenge missions and stuff, and you can also try to collect things in the world and even buy buildings like in GTA, so you can make more money to buy more stuff and things like that. Really fun. That's actually out on PC, Mac, Linux, I think.
Yeah, it's Unity.
Should be on Xbox One, I think, because I think that's an ideal Xbox game, if I'm not mistaken. So yeah, that's really cool. And the other thing I have been playing, actually have been playing a lot, is Wasteland 2, which is another Kickstarter game. And full disclosure, I actually backed that game because I like CRPGs, so I totally backed Wasteland 2, which is a sequel to a now 25-year-old game.
Wait, what are CRPGs?
Computer RPGs.
Okay.
Basically party-based, top-down RPGs with lots of mechanics.
The term originates from, like, the games, like D&D rules or something.
Mm. Yeah, like Baldur's Gate or something like that. And Wasteland 2 is totally a CRPG. It's completely in 3D, but top-down. And it's based in a post-apocalyptic world. You are part of the Rangers, and one of your fellow Rangers has been killed, and you try to find out how and who it was. That's how the story basically begins. And like in all these RPGs, you get like tons of side quests and other things on the way until you even have any idea who is responsible for killing your fellow Ranger. What's cool is you, right from the get-go, you start out with four party members. You can pick four pre-made characters or can make up your characters completely on your own. You can pick portraits, decide how the player model looks, give out attribute points and skill points, and basically create all the classes or mix of classes that you want, which is actually, it doesn't really have a class system. Everything that characters can do is based on the skills. So if you want a sniper that's also great at demolitions and also good at lock picking saves, you can totally do that if you want to. It's totally up to you how you give people skill points and attribute points. So that's super fun. But that's also why I started on playing the game and then started over until I really got a sense of how I want to play that game, which is not a bad thing. For games like this, it's not unusual that you have to learn a bit about the game until you can really decide what kind of party you want to play. And of course, on your way, you can also, like, I think you can pick up to three other party members, which is pretty cool. And the combat system is also really fun. Unlike Baldur's Gate or the upcoming Pillars of Eternity, which I'm also pretty excited about, it's not this kind of combat system that you saw in Baldur's Gate, where it's basically real-time and you can pause it. It's completely turn-based. So they have an action point system in which you moving specific distances costs so and so many action points, and your character has mostly, I think, like 8 to 12 action points for the most part. So I know I have a guy with an assault rifle, so shooting costs 5 action points, and so that means I can only move so much that I can also shoot, or I can use more action points to actually try to go for a headshot and all this kind of stuff. It's really good. It works really well. Started out a bit buggy, but they have been patching the game really well. Right now, not many complaints from me from that sense. I didn't have any crashes or something like that. It's just, I think, a really good RPG of this kind, and if you are into these kind of games, I can only recommend it. And I'm pretty sure this is also out on PC, Mac, and Linux, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not sure about Linux right now, but definitely Mac and PC.
I'm sure all your next user base is going to be really disappointed in that.
Yeah, I'm just not sure. It's a Unity game, so normally I assume it's out on everything, but I'm not sure right now. Yeah, for me, that's another really successful Kickstarter game. A real home run, even better than the Shadowrun game, in my book, which was also really good.
And now you've got Pillars of Eternity to wait for as well.
Yeah, I backed that as well, so and that should be out this year as well. So, fingers crossed, I have to get through Wasteland until until that game comes out.
Okay. Daniel?
So, what was it? We had Defense Grid 2 came out this Tuesday. And, yeah, it was this Tuesday. And I don't know when Heavy Bullets came out. It may have come out this last week.
I think it was last week. I got it.
Either way, I've been playing that as well. And Heavy Bullets is kind of like, if you were to sort of squeeze a first-person perspective into Binding of Isaac, and I think it works better than Binding of Isaac because it gives you a lot more freedom to sort of take things in your own time. It's very hard, just like Binding of Isaac. I think it's actually harder than Binding of Isaac because I don't know, I can't get past the third level. And I know there's a boss on the fourth floor, and I'm dreading getting to the fourth floor, but I'm going to have to get there eventually. And, yeah, it's if you don't know what Binding of Isaac is or Heavy Bullets at all, it's a first-person shooter where you basically... You have one gun, and you start off with six bullets, and the way the shooting kind of works is when you shoot a bullet, you then have to go and pick it back up because you don't, like, if you lose bullets in this game, it's not very easy to get more back. So you, and most things die in one hit, so you just have to sort of take your time. But, and you have very low health and it's permadeath, so the idea is you go across the floor, these randomly generated levels, popping enemies as they come, but obviously taking the time when you shoot, because otherwise you're going to spray your bullets everywhere and you're not going to be able to shoot anymore because you can't go and pick them up. You gain money when you kill things, and you use that money to buy items that might affect things. So, like, you have bombs and you might buy, like, a throwing glove, which lets you throw a bomb instead of just put it on the floor. You might get a homing bomb, which you just set it out and it homes into the nearest enemy. You might find a key cards, and they let you open special doors. And, yeah, it's really cool. It's got a nice art style to it. Any computer in the world will run it, because it runs on my laptop.
Does it run on Linux?
Yep, it runs on Linux.
Pretty sure it's a Unity game.
Yeah. It's really cool. The soundtrack's really sweet. And there's a lot of... the style they're going for is kind of like... If you were to make a first-person shooter in the style of kind of like an Atari game... And it's got some nice...
It's all very, like, flat-shaded.
Yeah.
And very geometrical in shape.
Yeah. and there's some cool sound effect things that happen. Like, you get some, like, weird digital effect as you walk through grass and stuff. It's really cool. It's cheap, and the soundtrack is great. If you like games like The Binding of Isaac or roguelikes in general, and you like Doom... This game was made just for you. I don't know what else to say.
Do you know how many floors it has? Or
it
is
tells
it completely open-ended?
The game actually tells you. Hang on a second. Let me find out for you.
I'm just curious because every like roguelike does that in a different way. So some are endless. Some have a specific number of floors.
Except for Rogue Legacy, which is perfect.
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm going to have to get through the first level in order to tell you, so I don't know. It does tell you there's, like, there's not very many, there's like maybe 20 max.
Yeah, okay. No, but still a fine number of floors. So.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a roguelike, so if you die, you have to start over. So
yeah, but there's a cool thing where, like, the money management in Heavy Bullets is really cool, because if you find, like, vending machines that are obviously randomly placed, and some of them will sell you health, and some of them will sell you... some of them will sell you more bullets and bombs and stuff. But there's also a bank vending machine, and you can put money into the bank so you can withdraw it on a different playthrough. If you're about to die and there's a bank and you say have $100, you just put all your money in the bank, and then you have how much money for the next playthrough if you're doing better there. And you can buy items like... there's an item that transfers, that keeps all your money and all of your... items, and it will give them to you in the next playthrough, and there's also an item that saves a portion of that.
So, like an insurance or something.
Yeah, like insurance. They call it one of them's called life insurance, and one of them.
Oh, okay, nice.
Insurance premium or something like that. Yeah, so it's really cool. It's got a nice style to it. The other game is Defense Grid 2, and if you don't know what Defense Grid is, it's just a tower defense game. It's not anything special, but it's probably the best tower defense game you can get, because it has the first one was just like it was this cool sci-fi sort of thing, and you had this British robot talk to you, and he was kind of had like interesting quips every now and then, and so this is a sequel. It's not a whole lot different. They made a bunch of changes to the economy of the game, which I'm not. It doesn't matter to me that much, but I can see why people will be upset. Basically, the way it used to work is the more, like, the whole point was to protect these cores, and you'd have, like, 20 of them, and an enemy could just walk in, take the core, and it'll walk out. And if it walks out, you've lost it for good. And there used to be, so the more cores you have, the more money you would gain over time. And they seem to have removed that for the second one, which is really strange. But what they've added is it has a story to it now. And the story isn't the most complex thing in the world, but when you figure out, like, it's told via a bunch of text in the loading screen for each level, which is kind of interestingly written, and you're not quite sure what it's talking about for the most part, but it's still interesting to read. And there's also, like, a whole bunch of characters, including Jennifer Hale, that talk to each other about, and they make remarks and quips and stuff to each other when you're playing. So it's kind of interesting. And then the story sort of ties together at the end in a way you don't expect, and it works out. It's not the most complex thing, but it works out pretty well. The graphics are nicer. There's some cool features, like you can get the game to generate heat maps of how much damage the enemies have taken, so it shows you what spots you have to concentrate on the map based on your tower placement. And you can then hover a tower, and it will show you a heat map of the damage that tower gives out, which is nice. But yeah, it's not too big of an improvement. It's kind of what you expect to a sequel of a tower defense game, to be honest. I'm not sure it's worth the high entry price. It's like $25, which is a little high for a tower defense game. But it's a good game. It's not bad by any means. So yeah.
Okay, Jason, update on Destiny.
Yeah, I've just been playing more Destiny, which we kind of talked about already.
How much time have you spent at the loot cave?
Before it got shut down, I spent a couple hours at least, probably a few more
hours
than that, actually.
I spent 0 hours at the loot cave because I upgrade my reputation, so I just bought all my legendaries, like a smart man.
Can somebody explain what the loot cave was, or is?
The loot cave was this cave where enemies would spawn off, and if you stood a specific distance amount away, they would just keep spawning every 6 seconds, and you just keep shooting in the cave, you'd kill them all really easily. And it would, you know, use the regular dice rolls. It's basically like banking on volume to kind of farm the dice roll aspect of enemies dropping loot. So since you're killing so many enemies, you get a pretty good amount of loot.
And it was good to actually get legendary loot. Legendary engrams, let's say. It doesn't have to be legendary loot.
Right, so it doesn't actually drop loot. It drops engrams, which you take to the cryptarch in the tower, and Protect decrypts it into an item. So the few times you get a legendary engram, like 90% of the time, not actually going to be a legendary item, which thankfully they're fixing in an update next week, because it's a terrible, terrible system. But,
I get about the loot cave is like, well, I understand maybe if people found it the most efficient way to get the engrams, then fine, right? I would do it, but okay, like, there are people that do this in MMOs and Borderlands all the time, so whatever.
Yep.
But, like, when they shut down the loot cave, people got mad that they shut down the loot cave and not mad at the fact that the loot drop system is completely broken.
Yeah, and I saw you I've seen a lot of gaming sites write about it since the Loot Cave got shut down, and that's absolutely true. Like, and I'm glad they're going to at least start addressing that. For me, it wasn't, I mean, I did get a couple of useful items. It was mostly, like, I got enough items to break down for materials so I could upgrade the items I could actually use, which are also hard to do.
Yeah, I told people, like, within the first week, I told people, you know, if you want just legendary stuff and you can't get it, just get your reputation up and just buy it. It's very easy that way, because they give you the option to just buy legendary, all legendary.
The problem is it takes a long time to get your reputation up.
Yeah, but it didn't take. I did it.
Well, this is the thing, though. Is so did farming the Loot Cave take a long time?
Yeah.
So
it took. But it took less time. I actually did something that was fun, unlike you.
Well, it was fun in its own way. I mean, I spent a good amount of time there, but I didn't. You know, I would do it intermittently with actual missions and stuff, and you know, doing bounties like getting a bunch of headshots on the Fallen who are in the surrounding area. So I'd shoot in the Loot Cave, shoot the Fallen, shoot in the Loot Cave, shoot the Fallen, and, like, you know, just use it as kind of like a boost rather than it wasn't my only activity. That makes sense. But yeah, I'm glad they're tweaking the drop system, because it's been a sore point.
The way it previously worked was just so dumb and broken.
Yep.
I'm really glad they fixed it. But it actually took way too long. I'm really surprised the game actually shipped like this. And no one thought, like, it was really dumb that only, I think Reddit tested it, like 30% of legendary engrams actually got you a legendary.
Yeah, and anecdotally, my rate is definitely lower than that. So
mine was,
I think I calculated mine to 1 out of 10, so, you know.
Same year, I was at like 10 to 15% was my rate.
Yeah. So, I mean, outside of that, I do like the way they're introducing new things every week. Like, there's this Queen's Wrath event going on right now. So there's a bunch of, I mean, it is reusing the same missions and assets and stuff, but it's just like nice little wrinkles to get you to play the same content again and make it a little more interesting. And have new limited-time gear available.
That event is also nice for people who are lacking legendary gear, because it's an easy way.
Yeah.
To immediately get legendary gear. For me, the event is now that they made it so if you dismantle the gear that you get from that event no longer drops shards, that event is kind of useless for me because
gotcha.
I don't get anything I need.
Yeah, and I think like that's how any of the high level like playlists or things should be, which I think is part of what they're fixing, but like it would suck to go through. Like, you would think you play the high-level mission so you can increase your chance at getting high-level drops, but currently that's not the way it actually works. It makes too much sense. But outside of Destiny, I picked up FIFA 15 this week on PS4. Nothing, I mean, it's FIFA. It speaks for itself. I will say it's very pretty on the PS4, and the physics system is, like, remarkable. Just in really, like, subtle, nuanced ways, just the way the players and the ball moves and everything in, you know, just little situations. It's just so realistic. Like, it makes the last gen versions feel so robotic by comparison. And it doesn't really do that much for gameplay, but it's big on presentation in that way. So that was cool.
I tried the demo and also really liked it, I have to say. But yeah. I also tried the Pro Evolution Soccer 2015 demo. And I have to say, this You should. This might be the year when Pro Evolution Soccer is basically on the same level as FIFA.
Hmm. It's been a while. I might have to check that out. That's on next gen also?
Yeah. And the faces of the players actually look better than in FIFA.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And then besides that, I finally finished Walking Dead Season 2 this week. It was alright.
All the enthusiasm.
I know, that's such growing impressions, especially for somebody who loved the first one.
Yeah, I love the first one, but like the first one just had a much stronger identity, especially from an episode to episode kind of comparison. Like each episode had very strong like individual storylines, and then they obviously stitch together to tell a really good story. The second season, there's just so many down and boring moments. I mean, it's not bad. Like, there's a lot of interesting parts. There's a lot of thrilling parts. But, and I do like how kind of Clementine's evolving more. Like, she wasn't the playable character in the first game for the most, or the first season for the most part, and now she's the main character. So that's cool, but at the same time, it wasn't as fun or as thrilling or as interesting as the first season from start to finish. Or even The Wolf Among Us, which I finished about a month ago also. I enjoyed that much more too.
I think the overall in The Walking Dead season 2, they had so many wasted characters, it was ridiculous.
Yes, that too.
Like, they have a character around for a couple of episodes and you think, oh, this is going to get really interesting at some point. And then it gets a bit more interesting, and you think, oh, I can't wait to see how they finish this off. And then that character is just dead all of a sudden. And it's like,
yep. What?
Like, you didn't round this off at all. You just decided to kill them.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like some of the key people that wrote the first season left the company.
Well, yeah. And I hope they've already announced a season 3, which is kind of annoying, but I hope I hope season 3 is the last one, because I don't want this to be a thing that goes on forever, you know.
Yeah, I don't think I'm there yet to hoping it's the last one, but I definitely hope it finds its groove back, cuz the first season was like a really special experience, and two is kind of just like meh.
Yeah, I also really love the first season, but all impressions I hear make me just think maybe I shouldn't play the second season and just look forward to Firewatch.
Maybe. I mean, if you don't want to stick out for the third season of Walking Dead, don't do the second season.
Yeah, I was also going to say this sounds like the exact same criticism people would have at the TV show. You have the same conversation, except for I assume season 2 of the game didn't have them staying on the road for 8 episodes looking for a little girl who's probably dead at that point.
You could also make the same argument for the comics at some point.
Yeah, I was going to say that too.
Yeah. I guess kind of to that note, like it's really easy to say, oh my god, we have this crazy post-apocalyptic world, let's throw our characters in these like morally ambiguous situations. It's easy to do that once, but once you've gotten the obvious things out of the way, it's harder to keep digging into that well and keep finding new interesting stories. So,
yeah, that's kind of where the comic was. I dropped off at issue 100 for the same reason. It's like they'd find a new place to live. That new place is happy for a while. Something happens, they have to move out. They're back on the road. They find new people. There's a cure. There's a pot. Yeah, it kind of gets redundant and repetitious. Really.
Yeah, and it's kind of to that point. There's
that point where they like went into that new town where they had that party and stuff like that, and Rick became like the security guy. Was that around issue 100? I think that was the time, right?
I think so. When the new spoilers for a, I guess, 3-year-old comic. But yeah, I think this is when they went to that new community where there was other people there, and that's when Rick kind of became their hard ass because his people had been through so much.
And it felt like I have already seen this before, and then I was like, yeah, I'm not reading this anymore.
Yeah, I mean, there was this one moment, I think in episode 4 or 5 of Walking Dead season 2, and this is a minor spoiler, but it's not, I won't touch on anything specific, but they come across this frozen lake, and they're like, oh, let's like go across, and like, you have the option as Clementine to say, no, let's go around, and I say that, and they're like, no, let's just go across, it'll be fine. I'm
do
like,
they do that?
Well, I wonder what's going to fucking happen. We're walking across the frozen lake. Jesus Christ, this is the most derivative thing, like, of course someone's going to fall through. Is it really that hard to predict? Like, I don't know. So that was one example where
it's really fucking dumb. I think the worst thing about The Walking Dead Season 2, and that was really, there was a bit where, you know, it's towards the end, you might remember this, Jason, where you get told, you're going to have to deal with this at some point, and I'm like, this is going to be the end. This is what the end's going to be. And it was! And I was like, for fuck's sake!
Yeah.
A character literally says to you, you're going to have to deal with this at some point. And it's like, oh, for God's sake.
So wait, they even had like a cliffhanger ending? Basically?
It depends on, like, the ending is the best part because it can go in, like, three completely different ways.
Yeah.
The
one I had was, like, a mild cliffhanger, but, like, not really. It kind of, it basically set the stage for everything to happen again, kind of the complaint you guys are having. But,
but towards the end, you get told, like, there's a big situation that's kicking off, and you can feel it coming anyway, and
yeah.
And then a character says to you, you're going to have to deal with this at some point.
Yep.
Mm. I don't think I like that.
I know, I can hear, I can feel it coming, you know, just don't tell me.
Yeah.
I don't think I like that even at all. I liked how the first season didn't have something like that, and how it ended was basically a possible cliffhanger, or it would also just work on its own, and that's what I liked about the first season.
Well, at least the first one, it was like, oh my god, like, yeah, it does work on its own, but then, you know, thinking about a sequel, you're like, oh man, like, what's next? Like, everyone's gone, like, this little girl's on her own, you know. The second one is not, it doesn't end on the same note, but it, I don't know. Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of the way the last choice / conflict played out.
Again, very sounds like criticism that could be levied at any part of The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just, well, it's because the show, the comics and the games, they try to sort of have the same themes, and it's a theme that you can't carry on forever, and they obviously try to, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. As for me, I've mostly been cleaning up my backlog this week. I started Fire Emblem Awakening. Really
Woo.
Digging that. That's a really
Those
great.
Cutscenes.
I don't. It doesn't bother me. Yeah, I'm digging it. I was gonna say it doesn't bother me, but everybody mentioned the feet, and now I can't unsee it.
Yep. I had that. It's just really strange.
What's wrong with the feet?
They have stumps. They don't have actual feet.
They have feet. Yeah. They sort of, their boots just...
In the anime parts?
No, it's in the engine stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So once you see it, you just can't unsee it. But yeah, I'm really having fun with it. I've spoken to Jason about this, I think. It's a great lunchtime game. I played it during my lunch break. Each map takes about maybe 20, 30 minutes, which is great after you eat something. So I've mostly been taking it, so I've only done, I think, the first 7 chapters. I've done a lot of when the random people appear on the map just to kind of grind my characters. And, you know, just trying to get the basics of the system down, because a lot of it right now I'm just kind of brute forcing. Like, I realize that it's best for you to team up people because they get stat boosts, but I don't really know how to exploit that system beyond just like, okay, this person's next to that person, or something like that. Really great style, like Jason said, really nice cutscenes, really great music too. some of the story's kind of stupid, like the part where like, she goes back and they're like, don't go back, and it's like, oh, she gets kidnapped, shocking. But yeah, I'm really having a ton of fun with that. And I'm going to mention this because it does segue into the first thing I'm going to talk about with news. I actually went back to Sleeping Dogs. That was one of the Xbox free games this year, or last year. And I started it when I was doing that, and I got sidetracked. And I decided to go back, because I was having fun with it. I just got sidetracked by other new games. You know how that goes. It's a good thing that game reminds you how to do everything every time you need to do it. It tells you how to pick up weapons. It tells you how to reload. It tells you how to fight. It tells you how to counter. So it wasn't that difficult getting back to it. Really digging the characters and the setting, but I probably lost track of what was going on, which is the biggest thing. Like, I got back into the game fine, but just kind of understanding. Like, I know my character is a cop undercover who's kind of becoming too involved with the triad that he's trying to take down and stuff like that. But, like, they'll mention characters' names, and like, I have no idea who you're talking about. But whatever.
It's not really that important. I mean,
I'm sure it's not. Like,
you just have to sort of just the basic idea of things. You have that, so that's all you really need to keep track of the story in that game.
Oh, that reminds me, and I think this goes for a lot of open world games. The karaoke minigame is awful.
Yeah. The best bit about the karaoke minigame, though, is failing it, because then you get to hear him sing it really bad.
Wait, are we still talking about Fire Emblem?
No, we're talking about
Sleeping Dogs.
Sleeping Dogs.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Sorry, I was like, what just happened?
You fished a complete part of Fire Emblem, apparently, with the karaoke minigame. No, that reminds me. I do like how they do kind of the character support in Fire Emblem, where you can, like, you know, they have the conversations with the support characters, and they'll have their little things. But there's also, like, the barracks where, like, random characters will either walk around or talk to each other.
Yeah.
That's a really nice way to kind of build character. And again, it's one of those ways where you can take or leave as much as you want. Like, you don't have to go through them, but it's really nice to just kind of add to characters' relationships and their depth and stuff like that. But yes, going back to Sleeping Dogs, I think open world games need to stop doing these mini games that don't really work in their game, because I don't know who thought this was a good idea. It's not fun, it's not difficult, it's not enjoyable.
The thing is, developers always feel like they have to fill their open world with stuff.
Yeah, and that's what I mean.
Just
why?
Not necessarily stuff that makes sense.
Like, I don't think anybody would have cried if this game didn't have a karaoke minigame.
This is the thing, though. It's like, when it comes to open world games, people complain if there's nothing to do in the open world, but people also complain when they do put things in it, because I don't want to fucking play chess in Watch Dogs. Why would you put chess in? I don't want to play that. I want to shoot people, you know? So, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. And there were a lot of people that complained about Mafia 2 and how Mafia 2 had nothing in the world. I like that, because, like, as far as I'm concerned, all the world had to do in Mafia 2 is be there, you know? It was a nice backdrop for a period set game, you know?
Okay, well, maybe you can compromise and meet in the middle. What if you do them, but don't make them part of the actual story mission?
Yeah, that also works, yeah.
Because the karaoke minigame is, like, I think the first time you do it, it's actually it's a core story mission. But then, in order to kind of, like, get in favors with one of the females in the game, you have to do karaoke missions again, because that's where she works. And that's kind of like, I don't want to do this. Why do you have to tie it into something?
Yeah, that should be a given, I think. I already hope, like, because I'm getting GTA 5, that I think that had golfing in it. I doubt it's very good golfing. I really hope I don't have to golf and that's part of the story.
Okay, so in GTA, you haven't played GTA 5?
No.
So the only time you have to do the minigames in GTA 5 is when you have to do the yoga minigame as part of the story missions, and that's a pain in the arse. The yoga minigame is the worst one.
It's awful.
And they make you do it.
But hopefully just once, right?
It's just the one, as far as I'm aware.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then it's an optional thing after that. But why would you ever go back and do that again?
It's the worst. It is the worst minigame I've ever played in any game, let alone GTA V.
Yeah. So, just put them in if you want. Just don't make anybody... Don't make anybody do it. Just put it on the map so we know where it is and be done.
Yeah, have it introduced in a cutscene or something and then say, yeah, you can do these things if you want to.
Yeah. But yes, like I said, speaking of Sleeping Dogs, we had the first trailer information released about their spinoff, Triad Wars, which is one of you take it, because I actually haven't been paying attention. I didn't want a Sleeping Dogs spin-off, so...
Triad Wars is a free-to-play online PC game where you create like a character, and you go out and do missions in the world in a multiplayer kind of setting. You build up, like, reputation for you, and, like, you can buy, like, businesses, and you might have to protect them from attacks from, like, other rivaling triads. And this is everything that I didn't want in a Sleeping Dogs game, because obviously I want a single-player open-world thing with a cool story, and instead you get a free-to-play PC game that's multiplayer.
Well, it could have been worse. It could have been a karaoke spin-off. But, yeah, it doesn't sound like a lot of people are excited by that.
that, to be honest. At least if they do carry, enough, at least it will show some sense of self-awareness.
I was also going to say, I could be mistaken, I've only heard about it in bits and pieces. It also kind of sounds like one of those hostage situations where it's like, if you want more sleeping dogs, you want to support this game.
Well, I guess so, because there's Sleeping Dogs Definitive Edition, which is coming out, which, by the way, is Square Enix charging 20 quid. I mean, okay, it's 20 quid on PC, and the only thing it does is more traffic and pedestrians into the game. It doesn't do anything else on the PC version, which is ridiculous. And obviously, PS3, PS4 even, and Xbox One get better textures and maybe 60 FPS, but still.
No, actually just 30 FPS.
Oh, well, there you go. There's
and,
no point.
And the videogamer.com guy said it wasn't even they played it.
So there's no point buying Sleeping Dogs on any platform. And there's Firewalls coming out, and then there's Xbox games saying, well, we would love to be able to do a sequel, so that means that we're probably not going to get it anytime soon.
Yeah, and this Triad Wars things, like you said, I have not played Sleeping Dogs, and now I'm kind of glad I haven't, because then I guess my soul would have been crushed like so many other people I've seen, because all the comments I read were like, I never asked for this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or saying to the developers, you have no idea why we liked your first game, did you?
And it's just a shame, because like Sleeping Dogs is not good, and Arkham Asylum or Cities, and this open world is not as good as or as big or as populated as like GTA, for example. The one thing it got right was the story. It wasn't like a cliche thing. It was well written. It had characters that you give a fuck about. Even here's a free to play multiplayer game. Fuck you, Square Enix.
And the other thing I always thought was like, despite it being so straight focused, it still allowed you to go apeshit crazy in the world.
Yeah.
And do some ridiculous stuff even during missions. And I kind of doubt that multiplayer thing will allow that.
Probably not. I don't care anyway. Like, even if it was, like, even if it was, it's free to play, so I'm automatically, I don't care. Like, it doesn't matter what it would be anyway, it's free to play, I don't care.
What was Time Splitters for?
I would be extremely worried. Very worried. But that's not happening anytime soon, so.
Okay. I guess since we're talking about Sleeping Dogs and Triad Wars, there's also a new Steam interface, I guess?
Yeah. Steam, they basically completely changed the storefront. They're calling it the Discoverability Update, because it's supposed to help discoverability, even though it's not. I don't know. So, like, for a long time, I'm still critical of Steam. I will always be critical of Steam, but I hated using the store because it was hard to find out what you did own and didn't own. It was hard to just find new things in general because of the amount of tosh that gets released on Steam these days. So, what Valve have done is they made it completely blue, which is kind of nice. It's a shame it doesn't match with the Steam client. They may put a bunch of new sort of modules in it, and you can change whether you want to see early access products, or you can turn off things that you don't own. You can turn on things that you like, turn off things that you do own. You can turn off software, so if you only care about games, it will only show you games. And it gives you a queue now, so it says, "Oh, we think you might be interested based on that or this." So, and you can just say, no, I don't care. It gives you a nice box that has all the sales and stuff in it, which is nice. But it's not... I think the biggest new feature is they have a new curation system, which is to say, if I think that there are people out there that have tastes that sort of align with mine, I can put together a list of games to say, hey, this is a cool game, this is why you should buy it, and if you want more information, I have a YouTube review, and I can link to that. The only problem that Valve doesn't seem to understand is that if everybody can be a curator, all you have to do is make a Steam group, which takes 2 or 3 clicks. If everybody can be a creator, that means that nobody's a creator. And what's happened?
Well,
is
that's not necessarily true. I mean, the higher profile curators will naturally.
Oh, obviously.
Blow the top. But then, if you have like if there's a niche one that you like that would never get like mainstream, you know, kind of a mainstream following, but maybe you follow them. I don't know.
I guess so, it's a thing that just sort of caters to the masses more than anything else, because I go to the curator's page and Total Biscuit is the top with 200,000 followers. Oh, okay. But it's kind of flawed in the sense that I can go to the page of a game, any game on Steam, and it will pop up, it will give me a box. Actually, they have fixed it, so. Because one of my initial criticisms was, why are people telling me to buy Borderlands the pre-sequel when it hasn't come out yet, you know? Like, you can't tell me that game's going to be any good because nobody's played it yet. Whereas they seem to have fixed that. There's no curation. But you go to a game that's been released, obviously, now, and it will just give you, a random, quote from a random person that's curated it. And it's just I'm not sure why. Instead of telling me what might be wrong and right might be good, what might be good and might be bad about this game, you just bring up somebody that tells me to buy the game, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense, you know? They haven't changed some things that they need to have fixed, these are only little things, but if a game has loads of DLC and you only own some of it, you can't select more than one DLC to put into your cart. You have to put them all in. If you want to buy 20 DLCs in one go, you have to put all 20 into your cart one by one, which is annoying. For some reason, if you want to filter by controller support in a game, which is going to be a big thing for people who buy Steam boxes, apparently partial controller support and full controller support are two different things. And there are some games that are labeled as both, and there are some games that are labeled as one. So apparently I don't know. They need to fix that. There's a bunch of things. And the problem is that Valve doesn't seem to. This is the biggest thing, is they when they need to change something, they change it, but they sort of go only about 70% of the way there, and they just don't bother for the rest of it. And this is everywhere. Like I mentioned earlier, the Steam webpage is now completely different color to the Steam client. So I've got a blue page and a black client, and it just doesn't make any sense, you know?
Yeah, well, the Steam client itself is like that. Everything within the window is blue, but the borders and everything are all black.
Yeah,
also.
And it's just I don't know. So it's weird.
The logo is even different. If I have it open, it's now a blue circular logo, but if it's closed, then it's just the icon on my desktop. It's still the black square one.
I don't know. It's better. The new Steam store is better. You can find things easier, but it's still not great. Another example is the queue. You click here to begin your queue, right? It's recommending me The Vanishing of Ethan Carter because it's popular. Okay, I don't care about that. Let's go to the next one. It's recommending me another game because it's popular. I don't care. They're recommending me another game because it's popular. Just because it's popular, that doesn't mean I'm going to like it. You have a system that's logged how much time I've played any of 355 games or whatever, and you can't tell me, you like Borderlands the pre-sequel because you have 400 hours in Borderlands 2 and you have 40 hours in Borderlands 1, you know? It's just, Steam has just recommended me a game that I can't view because it's not available in my region. they just don't finish things, and Valve need to finish. I mean, this is everywhere, even if you play their games, you know. They just don't finish them a lot of the time. And this is it. It's
heard that from Half-Life 3 fans are out.
Well,
yeah. It's just like it's overall it's better, and you should and it should be easier to get around, but it's just not there. Still, and it's frustrating.
Okay.
So yeah.
I guess the other PC news, because it was a very PC week, was that Blizzard's Titan was cancelled.
Yeah, they spent $50 million on this over 7 years on this game. They didn't show anybody anything about it, and now it doesn't exist.
It was never officially announced.
It was never officially announced. We've only seen it referenced in, like, leaked strategy documents detailing, like, expansion plans and stuff. And
they said that they are working on another MMO. That's something they admitted.
Yeah, and
just not an official announcement of like, hey, this is what we're working on, this is the name of it, because Titan was also just a code name.
Yeah, and I mean, I think Blizzard is like the only company that can get away with cancelling a 7-year, $50 million project like that.
I think more companies should do that. The same thing should have happened with the Asgardian by now, but...
Well, yeah, I mean, if something's clearly not working, then, you know, don't bother, you know, and it's just crazy to see that Blizzard is the only company that's actually willing to do that.
Well, I'm sure there are, I mean, we always hear about games that were in development that got cancelled, but we just don't usually get something so big. Like, there are a lot of games that either they get cancelled or they're kind of on the back burner for a long time, where you hear, like, okay, they went back to this and this and this. Like, we often hear about the trouble developments, like Duke Nukem Forever, or Asgardian, or Final Fantasy 15, which we didn't talk about, because we didn't have a show last week, did we?
No.
Nope.
So I guess we'll get to that in a second. But, yeah, so it's. I mean, technically, as you said, like, this game wasn't even officially announced, so it only came out because somebody was like, "Look, they canceled it, and it was 7 years and $50 million down the drain," which really does suck in hindsight, but it's probably better than putting out a half-assed game and ruining your reputation.
Well, no, like,
yeah, and, like, to be fair, like, how many companies can afford to cancel a game with that much investment?
Yeah.
You know, most can't. Like, it helps that they have a Diablo 3 and a Hearthstone and a StarCraft 2 and all this other, and just the giant vault of money that they've had from over the last 20 years.
Well, I mean, in theory, you should be able to, everybody should be comfortable enough to cancel products. I mean, every other industry does that. I mean, what, they make dozens of TV shows and only a handful of them get picked up every year.
In theory, yes, but when you bet your company on your next product, like,
that's
the vast
problem.
Majority
well,
of games.
The, yeah,
that is really the problem.
That's the problem
so,
with games development, is, like, companies, like, they put all their milk into one basket, and then they get surprised when it smashes, you know.
Yeah, because you, I mean,
and now
theory,
we're crying over spilled milk.
Yeah.
Yeah, in theory, you should have bet the farm on a game that's, like, what if they didn't have anything else? What the hell would you do for 7 years if you don't have a product on the market? But yeah, that was just, yeah. And it really does seem it's really difficult to replicate the MMO genre. Not many people have had success in that after World of Warcraft.
I think this indicates, like, even Blizzard, or even a tacit admission on Blizzard's part, that even they kind of just released the right product at the exact right time to be the success that it was. You know,
and
like, it... If WoW came out now, it wouldn't be the same. If it came out earlier, it might not have been the same.
And sometimes that works for you, and it's going to be interesting. Cause I mean, even if they can't replicate their own success, like, how is anybody else going to keep trying? But yeah, it is what it is. We also, I guess since we mentioned that Final Fantasy 15 had its coming out party again, at TGS.
It looks really nice.
It looks really interesting. It's a road trip.
I was going to say road trip.
Yeah, it's. I mean, that's an interesting concept for an RPG. As far as I know, we don't...
Well,
I mean,
it just
looks
so out
of
the
place.
Whole game.
driving like a Mercedes through these like open grasslands with these giant creatures roaming around. It just looks so weird.
That's why it's interesting.
Yeah, it's weird. It's going
to
be curious how they bring it all together, because right now it does seem to be a mashup of different eras. And I'm going to spend time in the game just wondering why they don't run over people with the car.
I think a lot of the monsters they showed would crush the car.
Oh, yeah, the giant monsters I get, but I assume they're also going to... Because the first trailer they showed had them fighting actual people, didn't it? Like when they showed it at
E3. You don't want all that blood and shit on your car.
It is a pretty nice car.
And everybody's had fun with that. There's been a bunch of pictures of them like, going through drive-through.
It's really weird how, like, the dialogue as well, like, when they drive past this massive thing and one of them goes, "That's his face!" You know? It's really strange to sort of see some earnest writing instead of video gamey writing.
And if they can bring it all together, we'll see. Though, a lot of the stuff that they've been saying hasn't really been comforting to people. The first thing I think is they wanted to make it a more casual RPG with one button.
Oh, God. Final Fantasy 13 had one button, and look how that turned out. Or two, forward and X.
Well, this shows a lot more open space, so we know it's not going to be down corridors. I guess they have you in the car when you're not roaming.
I hope that if they have... like the one button thing for casuals. I hope that they have like, because it looks to me like it plays a lot like Final Fantasy XII. And the best thing that I thought about Final Fantasy XII is the system that you had where you could program your party members to behave in certain ways under certain conditions. That was the best part of the game, if you ask me. Just spending all of my time programming all of my party members so battles would play out specifically how I wanted them to. Hopefully they have a system like that in there.
I didn't play 12, but I'm pretty excited that it looks like in the trailer that it's real. It's going to be a real-time combat engine, which I strongly prefer.
That has been the case for a while.
That's been confirmed.
Because it's
13 also could look like a real-time combat engine, but
yeah,
it's not.
but versus 13 already was real-time combat.
Okay, cool.
It was always going to be that because basically most of the people that have been working on that game are the same people that worked on Kingdom Hearts.
Right, including the director, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, the game it most reminds me of, it seems like it's inspired by Xenoblade Chronicles as far as like the battle system and the giant enemies on the maps and the wide open spaces. So I'm kind of, because that's also technically kind of one button. Like, it's an auto attack, you just kind of pick your specials and when you do them and stuff like that. So that's going to be curious. You did mention a director, and this game has a new director. The guy whose name I'm drawing a blank on right now.
Or do you mean Nomura?
Nomura, there we go. Has stepped down to focus on Kingdom Hearts 3. And the new guy's coming in. So what has he done? Did he do Type-0?
Tabata made Type-0, I think.
I think that's accurate.
And also Crisis Core.
So, he has a decent resume.
Crisis Core was really good.
Yeah.
And we're getting Type-0 this year or next year?
Next year, in March. Well, at least in the US. I don't know about Europe.
Yeah, and I think...
Probably also.
But it's coming with a Final Fantasy 15 demo.
Yes. So it's going to be the crackdown of this generation.
Only reason to buy that game.
So it's a Final Fantasy 15 demo that you're paying
with
for.
A free game.
Type-0.
And yeah. Have you guys seen the screenshots of Type-0?
They look really bad.
HD remaster.
It was a mobile game.
It looks ridiculous. No, it's a PSP game.
Yeah.
I think it's a Vita game.
And fucking hell, they put so much bloom into that HD version.
It should be worse. Have you seen the screenshots of the PC version of Final Fantasy IV. They literally just took the DS version and was like, here you go.
With the same resolution?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Well, it's great, Enix, and we expect this from them by now.
Yeah, Tabata did Final Fantasy VII Crisis Core as well. Yeah, Crisis Core was really cool, I think.
But yeah, it seems like now it's like the kind of, I think they said that they're 55% complete with Final Fantasy 15.
50 to 60, I think is what they said.
Yeah, which is great in theory, and then you think about the fact that it's been 7 years in development. It's kind of like, what have you been...
Oh, the only other issue with Hajime Tabata is that he also was responsible for Third Birthday, which was total trash. But I guess he's only coming in basically at the end of the project, so it's probably not going to be much of an issue.
Is 15 supposed to come out next year? Do we know?
They haven't given a window, but I mean 50 to 60% would imagine it comes out next year.
And does it still fall into the Final Fantasy 13?
No. There's nothing to do with
it originally planned.
No, that's right.
I actually always doubted that even the Versus 13 thing.
Versus 13 and it's like, this is not fucking in the Final Fantasy 13 universe. I don't care what.
Yeah, it always seemed more like the name was more like, okay, there were a couple of guys within Square Enix that wanted to make different 13, and that's why they're calling it Versus 13. I always thought that was more the case. Because one of the projects was basically picked to be 13, and the other one was like, yeah, this is this spin-off thing that's not really Final Fantasy, but it kind of is.
Well, it is now.
Speaking of which, if you're into Final Fantasy 13, that's coming out on Steam this month.
And if you aren't
into Final Fantasy... wanted to play it again.
And if you aren't into Final Fantasy 13...
You shouldn't buy it on PC either.
Yeah, I was about to say, if you're not into Final Fantasy 13, it's a great chance to talk about how terrible Final Fantasy 13 is again, as Twitter showed me. I was going to say, the other thing that came out about Final Fantasy 15 is apparently there will be no playable female characters in this game either.
That kind of sucks.
Yeah, not great. It doesn't look good, but on the other hand, judging by...
The bro trip.
What female characters looked like in 13, I don't mind.
Well, you could argue that all the characters are female. Because that's how they look.
I'm not touching that one.
That has been Final Fantasy's MO for forever. So, but it just, I don't know, it doesn't look great to not have any female characters, to be honest.
Especially being that Final Fantasy has always kind of had a diverse-ish party. I mean, it's mostly been females with, like, one minority character here or there. I mean, I guess that's unfair because a lot of them are Asian, I think.
They are nothing.
Are they?
Because it's always fantasy.
Yeah, it's never elaborated on. So.
Yeah, I don't pay them enough to know, but most of them look white. But it's weird that Japanese companies don't really do Asian protagonists, or maybe they soften it up for the West.
You think that's weird? I don't think it's weird. Do you know anything about them?
I guess. I was thinking about it, because Final Fantasy, and also because, you know, there was a thing about Mario Kart earlier this year about all the white characters. I'm like, it is weird that Nintendo doesn't really have an Asian... character in their roster, or any major ones, even like their kind of Asian ones are white, like the Fire Emblem crew. Anyhow, random thought. I guess speaking of Nintendo, came out this week that the new 3DS is launching in Australia this year.
Yeah.
And so it's Australia and Japan, and nowhere else for 2014, right?
That's pretty much it. We're getting it. Europe is getting it sometime. Europe and US even are getting it sometime in 15.
I'm going to say this. I assume they're bringing it out in Australia first, because it's a very small market.
Yeah.
That's why they can probably allocate basically extra stuff that's been produced for Japan also in Australia.
But if you want a new 3DS, just get one imported if you're in Europe, that is, because it's the same region.
Yeah, exactly. And
that's why people thought it was weird, because that's how you shoot.
The other thing is, I assume
how Nintendo usually works with this stuff. It's probably out in the US and Europe in March.
Yeah, I would imagine February or March. I would imagine they probably will do it with Monster Hunter 4 with us as well, like they're doing in Japan.
Yeah.
So that's going to be their big thing. And I think that's it for news. I guess we missed something. Oh, Home.
Yeah.
I forgot about Home. Sorry.
Just like everyone ever has.
No one can blame you.
But yes, I guess Sony has confirmed that they're closing it down in all regions by March.
Yeah.
So for all you homies out there, I think that's what you're called.
Oh my gosh.
I guess get your final adventures or whatever the hell it is you do in Home.
You sit around and talk and you go into areas that are basically advertising. I don't know.
I only tried it in beta, so maybe it got much better later on. I always thought it would be cool if it was like their virtual, kind of like their virtual, like how like they actually, you know, you get trophies in games. It would have been awesome if you got like a trophy case in Home where you could showcase your actual.
Every time when I see Home, it always looked like Second Life without all the
purpose.
Good shit.
Yeah, without a purpose.
It felt like it should have been an OS level thing where it could have been built in. Like you could, you know, you get random mini games or you get different themes. You can decorate your apartment with stuff you unlocked. But as far as I know, none of that happens. I think Home is the perfect embodiment of Sony during the PS3 era, throwing something out there and then not supporting it.
Pretty much.
Because, like, that, I remember, what was it, E3 2008 or 2009, when they went on this for about half an hour? And then
when it was one of the major trump cards in the platform wars of that era.
Yeah,
well,
and then...
Well, we've got PlayStation Home, and you don't.
Yeah, and then, like, the next year, nothing. Like, not even a mention of it. And I don't think they've really showcased it at all since then. And it's kind of like Wonder Book, if that's still a thing. But yeah, anyhow, I think that's it for our news this week. So we'll be back next week, hopefully with shiny new impressions of Shadows of Mordor and Smash Brothers 3DS, and I guess Foza, if somebody's going to get that,
yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah, in Germany, it's a holiday next Friday, so
I
guess
the only one
I will...
show with an Xbox.
So I guess I will have a lot of time with Shadow of Mordor.
Yes, I'm really kind of curious about that. I think... Well, we'll talk about this off air. So, for myself, Daniel, Martin, and Jason, this has been Dual World in episode 155.
Ow. I'll be coming home.